Welcome to the splendor, the spectacle, the sparkling sensation, where the romance, the comedy, and the thrill of Disney fantasies come to electric life.
And as our friend Jiminy said, welcome. Welcome to the Disney Nerds Podcast, a place each week where like-minded people get together to discuss all things Disney. We'll help you get your Disney fix on. Here we go.
A Magic Kingdom proudly presents, in a million points of musical light, the magical worlds of Disney.
Welcome to the Disney Nerds Podcast. This is show number 35. I'm one of your co-hosts, Sam, from Sam's Disney Diary, at Sam's Disney Diary on Twitter. With me tonight, Jimmy from Once Upon a Time Travel. Jimmy, how are you doing this evening?
I am fantastic. Happy to be here.
Unfortunately, Ed is not able to be with us tonight because of some power outages and internet outages, but Ed will be back next week when we explore some new segment ideas, which I think you guys will really like. So make sure you stick around for episode number 36 next week. Until then, I thought we'd spend some time talking to Jimmy regarding Once Upon a Time Travel. On the internet at onceuponatimetravel.net, Jimmy is an authorized Disney vacation planner. And I guess let's start with that, Jim. What does that mean, an authorized Disney vacation planner?
One of the things it means is, obviously, as a travel agent, we have multiple resources to go to book travel. So there's all kind of different vendors that I can utilize to book travel. Let's just say, for instance, one of my vendors would be Southwest Airlines. So I can book a vacation package through a Disney vacation package, as a matter of fact, through Southwest Airlines. But not only can I do that, I can also book it directly through Disney. We book travel anywhere in the world, whether it be an all-inclusive trip to Mexico, a trip abroad, a cruise. It doesn't matter. We book. We have the ability to book it all, but we specialize in Disney, and the main reason behind that is because that's what I am knowledgeable about. You know, I started this travel agency not as so much a job, but because I was passionate about Disney, and me and my wife and my family, we go often. Because we go so often and we got to be known as the family that's always in Disney World, inevitably we started planning all kind of trips, helping friends and family and anybody we knew that wanted to go down to Disney World. They would always call us and ask us all, you know, and try and look for help. So I said, you know what, we're helping them, we might as well try and make a little money at it. And one of the nice things about us is that we are fee-free. So if you book a Disney trip with us, we don't charge you anything. It would be the same price that you would pay if you book with Disney directly.
But you're also getting that knowledge that you bring, which I think is outstanding as a fan, and the passion that you have for Disney.
Absolutely.
It's great to ask somebody those types of questions that's booking your trip.
That's why we do it, because we are fans first, we're travel agents second. And you know, people ask me all the time, well, what do you bring to the table? Well, I can tell you, you know, I have a lot of resources, I have a lot of knowledge to help people plan their trips. So that's what I bring to the table, and if I don't know it, I guarantee you I know someone who does know it.
I think what's key there too is Once Upon a Time Travel is you. That's what's great about it. The voice that you hear here on the podcast, that's who you're going to be talking to.
Absolutely. Yep. You contact us about a quote, you're not going to be hearing from some person I have working in an office somewhere. You'll either be talking to me or my wife, but most probably me.
So let's talk specials, because Disney, I think Disney has trained a lot of vacation goers who are somewhat regulars, and we'll put them into two categories. I go to Disney a lot versus every once in a while. So two different mindsets coming in. Those that go a lot are usually waiting for the special. the 30% off or the free dining. How do you find out about these?
I actually get emails being an authorized Disney vacation planner. I get emails directly from Disney. Now, a lot of times I'll even find out about the certain things via rumor before I even get the email from Disney. I'll find it now with this 24/7 kind of news cycle we live in. You know, I'll actually usually find it on Facebook before I even get the email from Disney. A lot of people have contacts that work for Disney and are cast members, so a lot of times that information gets out before it even gets to the travel agents. But I do get emails directly from Disney. Also, Disney has a Facebook page called Disney Travel Professionals, so that information is usually released there as well.
So tell me a little bit about it. Do you get a lot of people ask about that, or did they wait for it, or is it best to book a room, book a package, then hope a special comes up and you can change into it?
Most of the friends who ask me, I tell them go ahead and book, get your room locked down, get the room you want. If you want that water view, if you want that preferred room, go ahead and book. To book, usually, all you need to do is to book a vacation package, is put down a $200 deposit, and that books the room for you. And then that's the other value that you get by using me as your travel agent, is that, you know what, once that room is booked, you don't have to worry about it anymore. You know that, hey, you know what, if a special comes out, Jimmy's going to find out about it, and he's going to apply it to my package, and he's going to call me and tell me about it. And that's what I do.
Perfect. So if the 30% off or the free dining comes out, that's something you can apply. It's always good to get a lower rate than you thought you were getting.
Just recently, I had people booked. One in particular, a friend of mine, he's actually going to be making the trip probably with us for a food and wine festival. And he had booked it already. And then I called him when the free dining came out. And hey, man, guess what? Free dining came out. I applied it to your package. Your package is now $600 less than what it was.
Nice. So let me ask you that you specifically, because that is around food and wine. So what type of dining package, and can you use it with food and wine?
So he has the plus dining, which is one counter service, one table service, one snack per person per day, plus the refillable resort mugs. Me personally, if I was going to book a dining package during the food and wine, I probably wouldn't do the sit-down meals. I probably would go for the counter service dining. But they like the experience. They're a young couple, so they like the experience of going to all those sit-down restaurants. What's nice about the dining package and food and wine is that there's all kind of things that you can get at the food and wine festival booths using your snack credits.
So can you, you mentioned it was a snack credit a day, a sit down per day. Do you have to use one per day, or can you use three snack credits in one day?
So when you check into your hotel, you have a bank of credits. So if you're going to be there for six nights and it's two people, you're going to have 12 snack credits. You can use all 12 snack credits the first day you're there.
So you could potentially just walk around World Showcase and use those snack credits and then double down on a sit-down dinner another day.
Absolutely.
All right, so there's some flexibility. And I'll tell you why I ask. I was never a fan of the dining plan until we did the show around Magic Kingdom and counter service locations. It's a show that you were stuck in an airport at, so you couldn't quite be on with us.
Unfortunately, yeah.
But, you know, if I'm a Tables in Wonderland fan, I'm an annual pass holder, I'm a DVC member, so I like the sit-down, being able to, you know, save the 20%. I think it works out in the end. But if you're not doing sit-down, if you're only doing counter service or snacks, I can really see how a dining plan could be beneficial and really save you some money.
And another thing I didn't think about, you know, now we're annual pass holders too, so...
Welcome to the club, by the way. It's about time.
I'm so excited about it, by the way. So, you know, but I was thinking, you know, well, that kind of excludes us from free dining, which in this one it kind of does. But if you're getting ready to buy your annual pass, or you know you're going to be purchasing an annual pass, you can get the free dining. For as many, the dining goes by, the dining credits go by how many nights you stay in the hotel. You do have to buy a package with at least 2-day park tickets. So I saw this posted somewhere, and I thought it was a great idea that if you're planning on going, if you like the free dining, but you know what, you want to be an annual pass holder, you can book the room for however many nights, get the 2-day tickets, and then once you're down there, use your 2-day tickets to upgrade to an annual pass, and that you'll get full credit for those 2 days.
Nice little trick. I like that.
Still get your free dining, and then you can still get your annual pass for your next trip.
And I think that's key to some of the information that comes out of an authorized vacation planner that's done it himself and needed to do some of these things. Because I get a question all the time, should I buy an annual pass or not? When you look at Disney's gate entrance, it goes to a 10-day park hopper, and they don't advertise prices over 10 days because that's almost into the annual pass price range.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much the break-even point. If you're going to do more than 10 days, I think that's when it starts breaking even for an annual pass.
Exactly. And I would even say maybe it's not 10 consecutive days.
Oh, no. No,
an annual pass, remember, is good for 365 days from the first day you use it.
That's correct.
So I many times have gone the last week of February 1 year with my plan all along to go in January the following year within 365 days. And, you know, that's 2 weeks. And then sometimes in the summertime, you get that itch and you start to think, you know, my tickets are paid for. All I got to do is get there. I can get an annual pass room rate at a moderate or a value at a low cost, and you end up there for 3 weeks.
Sure.
That's happened to me before. Then you take a year off.
And that, you know, that's what we're doing. We were there for Easter when we met you down there.
Mm-hmm.
So this year, Easter fell kind of late. I don't remember the date, but it was around the 20th. So then in October, me and my wife will go down for food and wine. And then next year, we plan on going for Easter again, which falls around the 9th.
Perfect. So it's earlier.
So it's earlier. So we get the four of us will get, the kids will get 2 trips out of the annual pass, and me and Kim will get 3 trips. And the other thing, you know, we talked about, you were saying not 10 consecutive days. It's important to remember that 10 consecutive days with Disney is a lot cheaper than 2 5-day trips. Five-day tickets.
Absolutely, yes.
So those 2 5-day, if you're going to do 2 trips of 5 days, I'd bet that the break-even point, and I'm not 100%, but I'd bet that the break-even point gets closer to 8 or 9 days when you're talking about breaking the trip up. Because
yeah, you're absolutely right.
That those 5th days cost you so much more.
Yep.
The 6th and 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th day cost you much, much more because you're starting back with day one.
Exactly. So what are some of the questions that you tend to get? I get a lot of questions. I'm not a travel agent. I don't even pretend to be one. I refer them to others. What are some of the questions you typically get?
You know, a lot of people want to know when the best time to go is. I don't know about you, but my favorite time to go is probably end of September, beginning of October, sometime around there. And then the first couple weeks of February, I think, it probably is a great time to go.
I like October. I like later in October, almost that first week, October into November. And I'll tell you why. You're there while they are doing the transition from fall to Christmas.
Wow, nice.
And you can, and I've done this before, done the not-so-scary Halloween party and Mickey's Very Merry Christmas Party.
Oh,
in the
same nice.
Trip. Because they're literally 1 week apart. The last Halloween party tends to be the 1st or 2nd of November, whatever the Friday is, and the first Christmas party is that next weekend.
You know, and to your point, you probably have a better chance of getting good weather toward the end of October. September, when we go, this will be our, I think, 4th year in a row, going kind of the last week of September, first week of October. And we've been and gotten really nice weather, but we've also been, and it's still been pretty hot. Then later you go into October, the better chance you'll have of getting a nice cool front or, you know, and having some nice fall weather.
What do you think's the absolute slowest time there?
got to be like the second week of February or something like that.
So what I have seen and I've never experienced, and this makes complete sense, it's basically the Monday or Tuesday after Labor Day when all the kids go back to school. So you're not going to pull a kid out of school the first day of school. So the park just looks empty those days.
Our kids go to school earlier here. So from 2006, 2007, 2008, and 2009, we were there Labor Day week every one of those years. We'd pull the kids out of school for, whatever, 4 days.
So how was it then? You were there. I've never been there that week.
It's hot. Still and the hot. Weekend is busy. But you're right. It does, right after the weekend, it slows down dramatically.
Like that Tuesday when kids would normally be the first day of school. You're not going to get many Northerners because I think most of us, that's when the kids start school.
Right, exactly. And, you know, I've been there. I remember being there once. I was by myself. My wife had taken the kids to go back to the room to change into costumes for the Halloween party. Mm-hmm. And I was in Magic Kingdom by myself. And you could walk on. I mean, this was a couple hours before the Halloween party started, so I think a lot of people were doing the same thing my wife was doing. And you could pretty much walk on any attraction in Magic Kingdom.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
You gotta love any time that happens.
Yeah, absolutely.
So do you get a lot of questions regarding the best resort? I'm sure people call you and say, hey, what's the best resort? Where should I stay? How do you handle that question?
You know, I think the first thing I try to do is get a basic idea of their budget. Because what may be the best resort to me and the best resort to you may be two different things.
Yep.
I'll be honest with you. I am perfectly fine at staying. I mean, this trip we just went, we stayed at Pop Century.
Yep.
And I am perfectly fine staying at a value resort. Just, you know, I think the room's a little small. I understand. Properties are big. But I'm okay with them. On the flip side, I've got a good friend who goes down. I just booked a trip for him at the Swan. He just went in January and stayed at Wilderness Lodge.
Nice.
He'd kill me if I booked him at a value resort. And not because he's too snotty for it, but because he's the type of person that's going to go to the park for a couple hours. Then he's going to go back to the resort and spend a chunk of the day there and enjoy the resort.
Well, I think that's key. That's key because typically, I love Pop,
sure.
But I'm a park goer and I'm not spending a lot of time in the room. Absolutely. Other than, and I'll tell you why I like Pop Century, the pool bar. I'll grab a drink coming back. The kids jump in the pool, they cool off a little bit, and then we'll do it again the next day.
Well, Pop is the only one that actually has a true pool bar, right?
The only value.
Because the other values have an outside bar, but it's kind of right behind the building. You really can't see the pool from the bar.
I stayed at Sports once. That was a while back. Once I got turned on to Pop, that's my value of choice.
So sports, music, and movies are all designed the exact same way. The bar is connected to the food court.
Okay.
So when you walk out the back door of the food court, the bar kind of jets out right there, just as a big square. And it kind of makes like a horseshoe bar.
Got it. So I think that's one of the big differences. You know, you talk value, moderate, and deluxe, and we can talk to those. Value tends to just be a food court, no sit-down restaurant, right?
Correct. So the moderates, there's a couple things that the moderates are going to give you. First of all, you know, some of them, you could make the argument that the rooms are a little bigger, but I would tell you,
yeah,
not enough to that you notice a difference. If you've got, you know, two adults and two kids, two teenagers, the little bit of difference in the size of the room,
it's still small.
Yeah, you're not going to notice the difference in the size of the room. The moderates will give you a water slide, and it's going to give you a sit-down restaurant and a bar, an inside bar.
Yep, and a pool bar, I believe, in all
and
of them.
And a pool bar. I think everyone has a pool bar. But the inside bar is a big deal. And you know that from Port Orleans, right?
If you look at all of the moderate resorts, and I've said this many times, and I did a complete video on it over at Sam's Disney Diary, Port Orleans Riverside, or just Port Orleans in general, because it basically shares the amenities with French Quarter next door,
sure.
There's a marina there. There's the ability to grab a boat and head to downtown. There's a fishing hole. There's tons of things to do at Riverside. The River Roost is the indoor lounge with Yeehaw Bob, so there's entertainment. There are horse carriages that you can get there. Some of those things you only find in deluxe locations.
Yeah, there's bikes. You can rent surreys. Yep. There really is all kind of cool things you can do.
Yep.
They do campfires. You know, but in defense of the values, they do a lot of things that we don't necessarily take advantage of. And sure. If we had smaller kids, we probably would. But there's cast members like out by the main pools of these value resorts that do poolside games all day. At night, they do movies by the poolside. They get those big inflatable screens that they project the movie
I've
on.
I've seen that catch on pretty much at every resort now.
Is it every resort now? Yeah.
I'm pretty sure they all do, because that just started as a deluxe thing. But, you know, how – it just makes sense. You run a Disney movie at night, and it makes a lot of sense.
Sure.
So besides Riverside, what else are considered moderate resorts?
So beside Riverside, you have French Quarter, which obviously is almost the same thing. It's a little bit different design, but I mean, they share a lot of the same amenities. You can walk from French Quarter to over to Riverside. Then you have Coronado and Caribbean Beach. I have not stayed at Coronado or Caribbean. I've stayed at Port Orleans 3 or 4 times. The advantage of Port Orleans Riverside is it's the only moderate resort that allows you to have 5 people in a room.
Yes, I've done that.
Yes, I've done it a couple times. Bed. Yep. So a couple times that we've gone, and twice it was my niece and once my nephew has kind of hopped along with us, and that's the only resort that you can have 5. So,
yeah, the only thing I'll throw out there for everyone, the 5th person is in a trundle bed. It's definitely not a good spot for an adult.
No, it's designed for a kid.
It's designed for a kid, so just keep that in mind. It's not by any means it's a couch through the day, and it flips down to a trundle, and it's a bed at night, and then you flip it back up through the day. But it does help. It's that spot for the 5th person.
Now, when we were there, it wasn't a couch.
What was it?
It rolled away underneath the bed.
Ah, not in the rooms that we stayed.
Okay.
So the flat screen TV is hanging on the wall above it.
Yeah, okay. Now, that may be different. It's been a while since I've been there. That may have changed. I don't know. When we were there, it actually rolled out of the bed in between the bed closest to the door and the door. So, interesting.
Transportation is a big difference between those as well, right? The values are all buses. Most of the moderates are as well, with the exception of Riverside, which has a boat to downtown Disney.
Just to downtown Disney.
Yes. Then when you move up to Deluxe, now transportation becomes pretty convenient because you're either on a monorail or walking distance to Epcot and Hollywood Studios.
I think that's true with all of the deluxes except for Animal Kingdom Lodge.
And I'll throw Fort Wilderness in there, too. It's a boat to Magic Kingdom, so it's not on the monorail loop.
Wilderness Lodge as well, yep. So,
and the rooms are maybe a little bigger. The amenities are, there's probably more things, but it's also a lot more expensive than a value, right?
Well, that's true. And talking about Wilderness Lodge and Animal Kingdom Lodge, those are cheaper, typically, than any of the other deluxes, which is interesting.
It is. And if you're going to spend time in the resorts, you're going to take it in, you're going to hang out at Whispering Canyon, or you're going to hang out at the boardwalk through the day, then absolutely, it could be worth it for you. I think, like you said before, Jimmy, it gets down to budget and what is in it. What do you like to do?
Right. With us, you know, we're like you. We wake up in the morning, we head straight to the parks. We're at the parks all day. We get to the room, we take showers, we go to bed.
Yep.
Maybe stroll to the pool bar, get a beer, go get something to eat in the food court or something. But we don't spend a lot of time at the resort.
The only time I would say that we head back is if it's summer. Right, in the summertime when it's hot.
Yeah.
That's when I really like the convenience of maybe one of the Epcot Resort Area hotels. right? Whether it's Swan Dolphin, Yacht and Beach, or Boardwalk, because you're close enough to be able to leave studios or leave Epcot to hit the pool through the day, let the little ones take a nap, and then head back. I think that's interesting.
Which one of those has the sand bottom pool? Is that Beach Club?
That's Yacht and Beach Club that share the same place, which is Stormalong Bay.
I've never been there, but I hear it's incredible.
It is incredible. I did a video on that one, too.
Did you really? Okay, I'm going to have to look that one up.
I looked that one up. I think it's Yacht Club is what it is. That's where the Yachtsman Steakhouse is. That's the best steak on property.
Never been to the Yachtsman Steakhouse.
No, unfortunately, when you and I saw it, we were running through the parking lot.
Oh, God, where were we running? So... I did watch your video on the Festival of Fantasy Parade, and I was
Nice.
So, to all you listeners out there, Sam's Disney Diary, make sure you check out his video on Festival of Fantasy Parade, and I would also check out the one on Port Orleans Riverside.
YouTube.com/Sam's Disney Diary, and interesting, the same audio that is the parade that I recorded, that's the audio that Ed used in the show last week.
Oh, cool.
So you get to see the video side of it.
That's right? Awesome.
So now you see what all those things were. What was that? What was smacking? That was Captain Hook's foot on the bottom of the ship.
Yeah, that's cool. That's awesome.
So what other type questions do you usually get? Because I actually have a few listener questions. How about that?
All right, let's go with listener questions.
All right. First question. And these are to the podcast. Remember, it's DisneyNerds@Yahoo.com if you have any questions. But these are all travel-related, so we thought tonight would be a good time to get at these. All right, this is from Rick. A question I was hoping you could answer. We've not been to Florida Disney in about 10 years and are planning a long weekend this Christmas. My questions: what is the most economical yet convenient place to stay? There are four of us going, visiting Universal and the Disney parks. Second, I suspect FastPass, or whatever it's called down there, is the way to go, but suggestions about improving the experience would be appreciated. And if any information you can provide is appreciated. That's Rick in Minneapolis, Minnesota. So I guess the first one here is, what's the most economical yet convenient place to stay visiting Universal, Magic Kingdom, Epcot, and the Disney parks?
I mean, that's kind of an oxymoron, right? Economical yet convenient. So with Disney hotels, the more convenient, the less economical they're going to be, right? Sounds like he's looking to spend a weekend.
Yeah, around Christmas.
So, I mean, everything there, I don't think anything's going to be economical around Christmas, especially that's convenient.
That's a great point.
For a weekend, and he's just going for a weekend, he wants to do Disney and Universal, and he wants it to be economical, I would probably not book that. I mean, I would book it for him, but not through Disney. I would probably book an off-site hotel with some Disney tickets and a Universal ticket, maybe even a Universal hotel. And
so the first question I usually have for somebody when they ask me something like this is, are you going to Disney World or are you going to Orlando?
And that sounds like he's going to Orlando. And that's why.
And there's a big difference.
Huge
because
difference.
If you're going to Orlando, you may find that an off-site location may work.
Absolutely.
Now, I don't talk about that a lot, but absolutely. A vacation home or, you know, the Marriott World Center is right across from the main gate. And I've stayed there before because I had Marriott points to use. So that becomes economical, right?
Yep.
And I think to your point, although we don't talk about Universal, there are some people that are going down there and want to see it. If you stay at one of their resorts, you get their equivalent of FastPass for all of the attractions as long as you have a room key.
Yes.
So I know people that have just stayed one night at a Universal property so they can get 2 days worth of that FastPass equivalent. I don't even remember what they call it. Rapid Pass or something like that?
No, you're asking. This is the Disney Nerds podcast.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know either. But they get 2 days worth of that unlimited FastPass over there and then head over to a Disney park.
That's not a bad deal if you do want to see Universal. Spend one night there. I mean, typically we spend a night at some off-site hotel before we check into our Disney resort anyway, just because it's just where we stop on the way in rather than paying a premium
for
Disney
too,
hotel. Right, so we're driving.
You drive.
So rather than paying a premium for a Disney hotel the night we get there, when all I'm going to do is go to sleep anyway. We stay off-site. I go to Priceline, get, you know, a room for 60, 65, 70 bucks or whatever.
Sure.
And then wake up the next morning and go check into Disney.
Now, don't forget, if you're staying off-site and you're driving, it's going to cost you $20 a day to park your car.
Yep, $17.
Just keep that in mind. Yep. If you're an annual pass holder, you do get free parking. That may factor into things. So I have stayed off-site before because I know I'm getting free parking with my annual pass. So keep those types of things in mind, too. So the second part of the question here was, I suspect FastPass or whatever it's called down there is the way to go, but suggestions about improving the experience would be appreciated. I think we may finally be settling into the final version of FastPass. Do you think we're there now?
We're getting close.
We are.
You know, I think the only thing that they could probably do now to upgrade would be that fourth and fifth and so on FastPass is... It let you have access to those by the app.
So let's step back a second. What was recently added, which could change your planning, there's a couple of ways I love FastPass. Number one, if you're flying in and you're getting in midday, you can have your FastPasses waiting for you that evening in one of the parks. So say you land at 2 o'clock, your FastPass Plus for your free attractions could be waiting over at Magic Kingdom. Maybe it's the Mine Train that you're going to show up and go right into the FastPass line. Or maybe you're going to head to Studios and go right to Toy Story Mania. Whatever that attraction is that the kids absolutely love, that's where you're going to head to and have it waiting for you. Something you couldn't do before.
You tested that.
I tested it. It works, and I love it. Let me tell you, it's perfect.
Yep.
But now for the other days that you're there with this new system, you may be better off doing three fast passes early to get those over with and then be able to go to a kiosk to get your fourth one and get your fifth one or hop to another park and get one. So it sort of changes things. I haven't been able to test that.
So I think you have to balance out that strategy with – I think that strategy would be optimal for me or you. Say I'm in the park.
Yep.
If I'm taking my 5-year-old and 7-year-old kids, I think you have to balance that strategy out with, hey, what's going to be right? You know, I need to make sure I get these attractions. It doesn't matter what time I get there.
Yep.
So for me or you, I agree. I would take I would take three fast pass attractions in the morning, just kind of whatever I can get, so I can move on to the next ones.
So speaking of that, I have my second question here. This is from Paul in Cincinnati, Ohio.
What's up, Paul?
Yeah, exactly. I'd like to get your thoughts on a few specific things here. What's the best place to have a late lunch in Magic Kingdom? Wife is a health nut. The boys are 4, 6, and 8, and they love pirates. Second, how much time do we need to get from a van in the entrance on a somewhat busy day? Estimated crowd rating of 6. Also planning to hit Hollywood as they are obsessed with Star Wars. So some questions there. Kids first time, they don't have any expectations. I know you have some knowledge and had to at least ask you for your input.
So
late, start with the first one, right?
Late lunch in Magic Kingdom. Wife is a health nut. So I'm going to Columbia Harbor House, and I'm going to have my wife get the hummus sandwich.
Or the tuna.
Or the tuna. Either one. Tuna. Both of those, the hummus sandwich was actually, my wife had it last time we were there. A friend of ours who lives in Orlando, Rachel, had recommended it to my wife, and it was fantastic. So I would go to Columbia Harbor House, sit upstairs, try and get the window seat overlooking the Haunted Mansion. That's where we were. So that would be the late lunch for me. And the only other one I was thinking, maybe an alternative to that, and I have never been there, but I've heard great things about it, would be the Plaza, which is more of a sit-down, but an inexpensive sit-down.
Yeah, with good sandwiches, those types of things at the Plaza.
Yeah.
Now, the boys are 4, 6, and 8 and love pirates. Now, unfortunately, there's not a pirates-themed restaurant. In Disneyland, you could sit right in the bayou and inside of pirates and have dinner, which would be awesome, but... in Disney World, there's no place to do that. Obviously, the boys could go over and visit the Pirates League and get dressed up and in Adventureland do that Pirates Adventure.
Probably
plenty to keep them happy over there.
Me and my son did that. It was fun. I mean, we talked about it on a previous show, that the pirate adventure thing. Yep. And my son's 12, almost 13. And he, I mean, believe me, he still loved it. He, me and him were running all over the place. So my wife and my daughter made it through about the first three stops, and they gave up on us. They said, you know what? We're going to go do something else. You guys can chase pirates.
So the next question Paul had, how much time do we need to get from the van to the entrance on a somewhat busy day? So now this is really a great question.
So
this is getting in the Magic Kingdom, right?
So there's a little strategy involved.
I think there's a lot of strategy.
So First of all, let me tell you one of my main tips. If you're driving to the Magic Kingdom and you're going to park at the Magic Kingdom, take your cell phone.
So big difference. Let's make that first. Are you driving or are you taking Disney transportation?
So driving. Van. So we're going to assume driving, right?
Yes.
So one of my first tips is wherever you park, when you walk out to the aisle to hop on the tram, take a picture of the marker with your phone.
It's a great idea.
Because it's a huge, the parking lot is so ridiculously huge. Remember if you're parked in Heroes or Villains? Because it's two different trams. So when you're leaving that day, you'll either have to go to the Heroes tram or the Villains tram. And if you go to the wrong tram, you won't get back to your parking spot.
You'll get back to where you started and get on the other tram.
Right. Exactly. The other thing is, once you get to the TTC, the Ticket and Transportation Center, a lot of strategy goes in here. You're almost going to have to, when you're walking up, you're going to have to kind of eye up and see where that ferry is. If you've realized that the ferry's heading across the pond and you just missed it, I would run up the ramp to the monorail. Opposite of that, if you see the ferry's about to dock, I would probably go catch the ferry.
They built a second ferry boat launch there on the transportation and ticket center side recently. Not on the other side though, but so they're obviously looking to increase the amount of people they can get across there.
Well,
because let's be honest, there's a bottleneck getting from the parking lot to the gate of Magic Kingdom.
There definitely is. So the other thing I think you need to consider is the monorail may get you there more efficiently than the ferry, but the ferry is a, and as much as I like riding the monorail, but the ferry is a very nice ride. Ferry provides a lot of great photo opportunities.
Yes, it does.
Approaching the Magic Kingdom. So I wouldn't discount the ferry.
I agree with you. So the question is, how much time do I need to get to that front entrance? And I think a lot of that gets back to, I want to see the morning show. What time do we need to get there?
Early.
So I did a whole video on this, right? The morning show starts 10 minutes before park opening.
Right.
It's when they come out, do the little song and dance, and Mickey comes around on the train, and everybody's happy and starting a great day at Magic Kingdom. And it is a wonderful way to start a day. And if you haven't seen it, I highly suggest that you go see the morning show.
It's the only one left.
It is. All of the other parks used to have these big opening extravaganzas. Now they don't. They just open the gate.
Yeah.
When you do it, you need to be in the area in front of the Mickey Floral, which is in front of the train station, because you can get into, boy, I almost said turnstiles, but there are no more turnstiles.
Mm-hmm.
You can tap your magic band or your room key and get in past the front entrance and sort of stand around and wait for the show to begin. Then when the show's over, they escort you back into the Magic Kingdom.
Pretty efficiently, too. They clear that area pretty good.
They do. But you need to be in that area 15, 20 minutes before the park opens if you want to see the show.
Oh, yeah.
So if you're driving in, you want to be hitting that parking lot
An hour before
because you're going to park your car, you're going to get on a tram, you're going to get on a monorail or get on a boat, take it across, go through the bag check, go through security, and then get in.
I would say, and you know what, if he's saying van and means Disney bus, so you skip the TTC by taking the Disney transportation. But I would tell you, you probably, if you really, I mean, if your goal is to see that morning show, I would tell you, if you want to be at that bus stop at your hotel 45 minutes before you need to be there.
Yeah. So remember, the buses, if you're Disney guest, if you're staying on a monorail, that's pretty easy, right? You're going to take the monorail around.
Sure.
If you're staying at Fort Wilderness, you're going to take a boat. If you're at any of the other resorts, you're going to be getting on a bus. And that bus is going to take you to a stop that's closer to the front gate of the Magic Kingdom, but it's still probably 10 minutes from stepping off of that bus to get through the security line to the right spot.
Yep.
Those buses get crowded early, believe it or not.
And if you, I mean, and if you get to the bus stop and you just miss the bus to the Magic Kingdom, you could be waiting at the hotel for 10, 15 minutes.
Exactly. And it always seems to work that way for me as four Animal Kingdom buses go by and I'm waiting for the Magic Kingdom.
Oh, you're telling me. Exactly.
So that's not just me. That happens to everybody.
Oh, I've seen when we were there, I don't remember which line we were in, but if whatever one it was, if we were in Epcot, we watched like three Magic Kingdom buses go by, two Animal Kingdom buses. There were multiple buses for every other stop, and we waited.
Yeah.
But it happens.
Hey, the only other heads up I'm going to throw out for the morning show, and I covered this in my video, if it is an extra magic hour in the morning show is an hour earlier. They don't do it again. So even if the posted public park open time is 9 and extra magic mornings are 8 a.m., that morning show is going to happen at 7:50 in the morning, 10 minutes before the 8 o'clock park open.
That's very good to know. I did not know that.
Yeah, so you will miss it. You'll show up and be like, hey, where is everybody? Well, it was extra magic and everybody's already in.
Gotcha.
Huh. I got burned once, so.
Gotcha.
All right, last part of this listener question. So the boys are 4, 6, and 8. Remember that. Also planning to hit Hollywood as they are obsessed with Star Wars. Kids don't have any expectations. Love your knowledge and input. All right.
Get to Hollywood Studios 20 minutes, half an hour before the park opens. Get there. Get in front of the line. As soon as it opens, run to the back and sign them up for Jedi Training Academy.
Yeah. Absolutely. So resist the urge to jump in the line of people going to Toy Story Mania or Rock and Roller Coaster. Head over to that sign up now happens in the ABC, the soundstage, right?
Okay.
What used to be the Drew Carey Sounds Dangerous, right near there is the Jedi Academy sign ups. Now it's important. All three of your children need to be with you.
Yeah, they won't let you sign up someone who's not present.
That's where they want to see the child, and they have to be, I think, 12 might be the oldest. They have to be with you, so you can't go sign them up and then run to Toy Story Mania. Won't work that way. The slots fill up quickly, and this basically, you'll get your time to come back. You'll come back to that same area near the ABC soundstage. They'll do a little parade after they put them in their little Jedi capes or cloaks, and they'll walk around all the way over to the stage and go through the Jedi Training Academy and ultimately be able to battle Darth Vader, which is – who doesn't want to do that?
It's such a fantastic little show.
It is.
The kids will love it.
And obviously, I don't know when you're headed down, but if Star Wars Weekend's going on – that's when you want to take some obsessed Star Wars fans, for sure.
And Sam.
And me, yes. And me. I will go. I'm still trying to get there. I have some curveballs that came up.
Right.
So how about that? Our first two listener question emails.
I like it.
Love them. So you have any more? We'll do some more segments where we pull in the travel agent, and we'll have Ed on as well. Some of our personal opinions, and then the opinion of a professional that can help you guys book this stuff.
And you know, if we get enough listener questions, maybe we'll do a whole listener question show. So
absolutely,
if you're interested, we'll give you a shout out on the show and read your question, and all of us will talk about it. So send us any listener questions to TheDisneyNerds@yahoo.com.
Yep, and don't forget the Disney Nerds Facebook group. Jimmy, 6,800 members.
Yeah, we're almost at 7,000 members. So go on Facebook and just go to a little search button, type Disney Nerds, and it's either going to say, I want to say group, but it may say community, and just ask to join, and we'll approve your membership, and you'll be in the club. And it's
in the Nerds. And lots of great stuff gets shared out there. I love being a part of it. Some of the things getting posted are wonderful.
There are multiple posts daily that strike me as, you know, just something I'm I haven't seen or haven't heard, which, you know, for us, if it's something we haven't seen or heard, it's pretty awesome. But that's what it's all about, is sharing amongst the people who have the same passion and interest as yourself.
You got it. So,
and guys, please also go to the Disney Nerds Podcast Facebook page, which is facebook.com/thedisneynerds, and please like our Facebook page.
Thank you guys so much for listening. Signing off for Ed, who will be here next week, and Jen as well. I'm Sam from Sam's Disney Diary. Jimmy?
Quaharini.
Kongaloosh.